Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between everything going on in our world as it affects us, our communities, our families, our society, and global well-being. Each week on the show, we feature different experts, advocates, journalists, thought leaders, documentary filmmakers, poets, and a whole host of other people connecting the dots and everything we need to know in our interconnected world. And in this week's show, we're coming to you directly following yesterday's election, the midterm election of 2018, which many have called the most important election of our time. Today's guest, I am delighted to say, is a return guest to Connect the Dots. Her name is Lulu Freisdak, and she's an Emmy Award-winning journalist and filmmaker whose election security investigations have received millions of views on Now This, and they've been featured on Politico, MSN.com, The Young Turks, The Hollywood Reporter, Salon, Truth Out, and Alternet. In fact, she will be having some pieces up today as well on the same topic as this show, which we'll be discussing. Her real expertise is in election security, election fraud, problems with voting machines and getting an accurate vote, and there couldn't be a more timely topic for us to discuss today. Welcome back to Connect the Dots, Lulu. So happy to have you here.
It's such a pleasure to be with you again, Allison. Thank you so much for all your work.
Well, thank you for all your work because, you know, we featured your election integrity reporting beginning in the primary and then throughout the whole election year, and it's never far from my mind when we talk about people voting is, can our votes be counted? Will we be allowed to vote? Do we have true election integrity? We certainly have, as has been seen in this election, millions of people organizing, concerned, getting activated. But the question remains, are the people being allowed to vote? Are our votes being counted? And today you have a breaking news story that shows really serious issues in a state that is critical to this election. And I'm speaking of Texas, where we've had a major Senate race between Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz. Please share with our listeners what your breaking story and investigation have uncovered.
So there's really two aspects to the story. One is the current election, and one is the backstory of the March primary. And this is in Dallas County, Texas, where we know there is a very contentious and high-stakes race happening. They're counting it tonight between Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz. And what we all want is to have confidence that those votes are going to be counted accurately. But the question is, are they, as you said? So there's a woman in Texas named Laura Presley, and she has a computer background. She worked as a device engineering manager in the semiconductor industry. She holds four patents. She has a PhD in chemistry and physics. And Laura has organized a team of election observers across the state of Texas to really start looking at voting machines and tabulators while they are in the thick of it, as votes are being counted. Because Texas actually has some pretty good laws, and there are observers are allowed to go in and really watch everything. They're supposed to have complete access as long as they don't disrupt anything. And so she is really utilizing those laws and getting people observing across the state. So what happened was in March, they observed the counting of the votes in the primary for really the first time in terms of the early voting process. No, I don't know if they had observed previously in the election night counting, but it was the first time that they had a team of people in there for the early voting tabulation. And what they found really, really stunned them. They found a computer system that was generating thousands and thousands of error messages, just constantly coming up with error messages on the screen. The observers would ask, the technicians what's happening, where are their error messages. This is according to Laura, according to her observation team. And what they've said is that the county officials basically ignored them, just moved on, just kept, you know, clearing, not worrying about the error messages. And they were given a report at the end of that count. This is, again, still in March in the primary. The observers are allowed to request this audit log. It's a huge document. It's 800 pages long with thousands and thousands of lines of code. And what they found on it was that it was filled with error messages. In particular, there was an error message that said votes exceed ballots. And one of the people we had look at the document said that that error message showed up more than 3,000 times. Now, it turns out that error, right? That's a lot of times for an audit in an election to say votes exceed ballots. Now, it turns out that that error message is listed in the ESNS management book, the manual, and what it says is that that error message, votes exceed ballots, it says to suspend a precinct if the number of votes in any contest exceeds the number of ballots cast. Like, literally stop the count. It's that important
so
of an error message.
So that's the rule. If they get that error message that they got thousands of times, then there's a correct legal procedure that they must follow at that point. And was that followed?
It's not a legal procedure per se. That is the official procedure suggested by the vendor themselves. And they're using that vendor software. Now, I reached out to ESNS, the vendor, and they said votes exceed ballots isn't always indicative of an issue or error. But I have come to take those statements, those public statements from ESNS with a grain of salt, just based on my past experiences with them. They also said when I asked them about their machine at DEF CON, that was demonstrated to be hackable within a minute, if they had a comment on that, they said, oh, well, that machine is never out of the hands of election officials, which is just actually not true. It's just point blank, not a true statement. There are thousands of people who have access to that machine. And if you look at that statement in a basic common sense way, votes exceed ballots isn't always indicative of an issue or error. It doesn't make sense. It's an error message. So Laura's team was very concerned about it. I've talked to a number of election officials, and they said it's very hard to know what exactly is going on. There are both reasonable explanations for this. I don't really want to get into like all of the details. There are ways in which if you had a two-sided ballot, perhaps, or, you know, there's possibly plausible explanations for why you would be getting error messages like this. If you were loading back in the absentee ballots into the precinct. But there are also very concerning reasons why you might get an error message like this. For example, if extra votes were actually being added into the system during the tabulation process, you would also get that error message. So the problem is that we have an election system here where we don't know what's going on, and so we can't have confidence in the results. And that is what is so troubling, is that we don't have confidence. And I'll just, some of these,
so
a lot
if
of
this
these
was going on, if this was going on back in the primary, then which what you're describing, then, you know, there's reason for concern in the current election.
Yes, exactly. The concern is, what if this was a test run for the current election, right? Because if there was the race that Beto O'Rourke won in the Democratic primary was not tight at all. He won by over 40,000 votes. But what if that was a test run? Or what if races down the ballot were impacted? So one of the things we did was we went through and tried to see, well, do the votes actually look suspicious? Is there something wrong with the actual count of the votes? And we did find problems with the vote counts. We found precinct after precinct where there were either more votes than voters who voted, or significantly less votes than voters who voted. Now, sometimes you could have less votes because maybe people don't always vote, you know, in every race. But these were really large discrepancies. So, for example, we found a precinct where you had 393 voters, and more than half of them didn't cast a vote in the Senate race, the most, you know, the biggest race on the ballot. And then we had precincts where you had 55 voters, and they were somehow so enthusiastic that they cast 119 votes. So we had multiple precincts. It's not supposed to happen. So I think what you're seeing there is you're seeing a county that's somehow in disarray. You're seeing data that doesn't match up, votes that don't match the number of people who signed in, computers with error messages. So Laura's team was extremely concerned, and this is all presented actually in an article that I've written. You can find it at truthout.org. It's live now, so if you go to my Twitter account, at Lulu Freistadt, I'll have a link up there to the article. That's at Lulu Freistadt, F-R-I-E-S-D-A-T, and you can read more in detail about it. So Laura's team was concerned, and what they've done is they have come back in force for this election to really try to monitor it carefully. And that leads to the second part of the story, which is that when they were monitoring this election, this general, very high-stakes Senate race in Texas, they found Wi-Fi in the counting room in Dallas County, a Wi-Fi signal in the room, and a voting systems computer actually being used for email, which is completely illegal. And the reason it's illegal is because it's not safe. When you have a Wi-Fi signal around a voting system, that is an open opportunity for a hacker or someone with bad intentions to access that computer over a Wi-Fi signal easily. Often they can bypass passwords, get control of the computer, plant malware, and change election results. So that's why it's illegal. Yes, it's not safe to have a Wi-Fi signal anywhere near the voting systems or the voting machines. And what they did to document this was they took a photo outside of the tabulation room. They're not allowed to take a photo inside the tabulation room. So they stepped immediately outside the door, and we have a photo, an exclusive photo that they provided me that shows multiple strong Wi-Fi signals right there outside the door. And you can see that photo if you go to the link with the article.
Oh, my goodness. So, in other words, they're transmitting, which also means someone can, they're both transmitting and people can get in electronically to the room, which is supposed to be completely secured. And that cannot be happening because it compromises the integrity. And this is, I mean, Dallas County, I'm imagining, is a very substantive and you know, influential county, you know, Dallas City and all of that, for any vote outcomes in the state of Texas, in any statewide or national election that's occurring.
Allison, yes, you are so on the nail. Dallas County is huge, and it's a Democratic stronghold, a huge Democratic stronghold.
Oh, my God, a moment of silence. I mean, you know, it's not funny, but, I mean, in other words, if somebody had bad intentions, if there was some form of what I believe you've referred to as in your article as malfeasance, in other words, tampering, and, you know, somebody were out to do that, then they are doing it in a Democratic stronghold. That's the place where the election office is not secure, where the vote is not secure, where it was demonstrated to be out of bounds in all the ways that you're describing on this program and in your current article, and that is occurring in the large Democratic stronghold. So, you know, here we have a Senate race in the state that's one of the most important, if not the most important, Senate races in the midterms, where we have a highly popular challenger Beto O'Rourke against an established, national figure in Republican politics, Ted Cruz, and it's been a neck and neck race. And now we have this serious doubt cast upon the vote count and the potential outcome with what you're reporting. That's the basic bottom line here, is it not?
It is. It's concerning. And now, I don't think that they are neck and neck. The last polls that I looked at, it looked like Cruz had a lead. Maybe I wouldn't be able to say, how much of a lead, and I haven't looked at the polls in the last day or two. So I don't want to speak to how close the, race is. I'm not,
right.
And that is not my expertise.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a very contentious race, a lot at stake, and I know both sides have really have bet a lot on it. O'Rourke has, it's an incredibly expensive race. He's raised a tremendous amount of money, maybe more than, I'm not sure, it could be more than any of the other campaigns. He's raised a lot of money and poured a lot of money into that race. So you don't want to think that all of that effort that's gone into the race would be decided by anything other than the voters who at the end of the day are actually supposed to make that decision. You don't want to think that it could be decided by either fraud or error. We want these elections to be accurate, and we want to have confidence in them.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to pivot now a little bit, if you're up for it, and just talk a little bit about kind of the context of Dallas County. One of the things that I found troubling about Dallas County, when I just did a little bit of research, Laura Presley was kind enough to send me some links. Some of the local coverage there showed that they've been identified as a county with corruption previously. So, for example, there was a report that came out that they were basically engaged in pay-to-play with the vendors, and they were cited for sending the news report showed that they were sending emails to vendors suggesting that the vendors could pay for this or pay for that. Could they pay $1,500 for their pins for a conference they wanted to go to, or for T-shirts, or could they take them out to dinner? They were basically requesting money and favors from multiple election system vendors.
Goodness.
It's completely inappropriate. It's completely against the Texas ethical codes. And what it says is that you have a county here. What it says to me is that you have a county and their priority is somehow on these kind of favors that they can get from the vendors, as opposed to finding a vendor that's really going to give them the best results in terms of security and accuracy. And in fact, when I spoke to a company that has a better reputation for security and accuracy, that company is a company called Free and Fair, and they're the ones who have been engaged to do the support for the risk-limiting audits in Colorado. It's a company that has very high technical standards, and in my encounters with them have demonstrated a great deal of transparency and integrity. Well, Free and Fair put in a bid to Dallas County a while back, and what their CEO told me was that they were very displeased with the way that it went. They didn't feel that their bid was treated honestly, and the whole process seemed very shifty to them, and they did not get the bid ultimately. So what you're seeing is a county, what that says to me is you have a county here that whose priority is not on security or transparency, whose priority is on getting these monetary favors from the vendors. And that really does us all a great, great disservice.
Well, it's corrupt. We're talking about the concern that we have an honest integrity rather than a corrupt system in terms of voting. And then, what's being done here is that the actual process of hiring the vending system or contracting for the vending system is itself corrupted by officials in the county or people in an office in the county wanting personal benefit and favor. So that doesn't speak well to the goal of integrity.
It doesn't. And then we have to even take another step back and say, why is that being allowed to happen? Why do we have vendors whose priorities are not on security? Why do we have counties that are not being held accountable? And really, when you go up the chain of command, you go back to the Election Assistance Commission, and you have a commission that somehow is not setting high enough standards. The bar is not high enough. They are not holding the vendors accountable for security. They are not issuing guidelines that are strict enough that, you know, counties, you know, would be forced to comply and bring up the bar. There really isn't the kind of oversight and regulation of the elections industry that we need to have. And you have to, it's really, when you trace it back, when you just climb up the ladder of accountability, you wind up at the Election Assistance Commission, which actually, I believe, does not even currently have a quorum to make decisions. So you really have a commission there that is not at the helm, is not exhibiting the kind of leadership on security that it needs to, and we are seeing the direct consequence of that in terms of this type of incident.
You know, what is supposed to happen when all of these anomalies and errors and mistakes are showing up in their data? I mean, are they just supposed to, you know, kind of shrug and say, oh, gee, you know, that's too bad. More votes than people voting, too few votes for people voting, you know, all of these various anomalies. I mean, how do you feel confidence that they had an appropriate response to fix this before this election, and what should the appropriate response be?
Well, Joe Canary, who was one of the experts that I reached out to at Free and Fair, said that these irregularities are not necessarily uncommon, but that they are supposed to be addressed immediately in an audit. So the county administration is supposed to look at that. They're first off supposed to find it and recognize it, which apparently these discrepancies weren't even found. You know, they just weren't even aware of them, possibly, or if they were, there's no indication that they were until, you know, Laura's team and our team took a look at this data. So they're supposed to find them, be aware of them, and then they're supposed to do, you know, an investigation, an audit, and reconcile them. And none of that happened. And that, again, is very problematic. So I'm going to say there's some good news here. Let's look for the bright light, you know, sunshine in our cloud. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. What's great is that you're seeing all over the country, you're seeing teams of people stepping up and saying, this is not okay, and actually taking really important actions to address this. And Laura's team is a wonderful example of that. She has these skills, you know, as somebody with a background in computers, and she has a fascinating story. She ran for city council in 2014 and in Austin, Texas, and she's convinced that she won that race, even though the results said that she didn't. She's convinced that that race was manipulated against her, and it transformed her. And she filed a lawsuit. She's a computer, someone with a computer background. So she actually initially, before filing a lawsuit, she went in and looked at the audit logs. She wanted to see documentation. She was very dissatisfied with the documentation that was presented to her. She found, again, all kinds of error messages in the audit logs. The county was not able to provide her with the ballot images that she felt were required to be presented by Texas law. So she did file a lawsuit, and that lawsuit has made its way up the chain, and it is now pending. She is waiting to find out if the Texas Supreme Court is going to hear the lawsuit for her race for city council from 2014. Now,
wow,
that's not enough. She's, I don't know where she gets her energy, but in the meantime, while she's waiting for her Supreme Court to find out if the Supreme Court's going to weigh in, she has organized election observers all over the state of Texas and got and really focus them on these specific types of observations, looking at the voting equipment, looking at the tabulators, getting in there and observing what is happening, getting the audit logs, getting teams of data analysts to comb through this data. She had people for months looking at this 800-page systems audit log, scraping off the data vote by vote by vote and finding all of these discrepancies. And what's great, she actually, when she spoke to me, she was not discouraged at all. She was very uplifted. She really was very upbeat. She said that they found this basically sort of, you know, complete mess and county in disarray in March. And when they went back and observed, now she's got her team down there again observing in this election. And granted, they did find the Wi-Fi, which we all understand is a major, major problem. But they did not. What they did not find was all of these error messages so far. The computers weren't, you know, coming up with these error messages. And the process seemed, at least in that regard, they haven't got the audit log yet, but they're not seeing the kind of error messages that they saw that were so alarming to them in the primary. And so her hope is that this kind of sunshine on this process is in fact helping to clean it up. If there was a problem, if there was some sort of, whether it was error or fraud happening in the March primary, she believes that the fact that people are in there in county after county after county observing, paying attention, is actually reaping a benefit, and that we are seeing some improvement. And that is encouraging.
So it's basically the sunshine is shining a light on what's going on and really getting people who are trained and know what to look for with Presley's group and their expertise to be watching and to put citizens' eyes upon this process, as well as to, through the media, as you're doing, as we're doing here today, raising awareness about this so that these, you know, voter purges, bumping people from the rolls, discounting people and prohibiting them from voting because they, for example, live on a Native American reservation and don't have an ordinary street address, you know, should never be normalized. They're not okay having faulty machines that were, you know, selected based on criteria other than who can deliver the tightest and most secure and most transparent and accountable system. That should be the criteria, not, you know, are you giving me some, you know, added goodies here? You know, all of these things are ways that we as citizens can stay aware and, you know, and really follow up. So, yes, we vote. Yes, we get out the vote. But we also need to make sure the vote is accurately counted, is secure, is can be recounted with transparency. I mean, what would be, you know, we need to assure all of that. Our job is not over. You know, what would be the main lookouts from your point of view, having, you know, investigated these issues for, you know, going on almost, I guess, a decade at this point? You know, what is your, what can we as citizens do to, you know, abet and get ourselves a process that we could trust or we could count on?
It's a that's a wonderful, wonderful question to take a look at. I will encourage people to stay in touch with me. You can follow me on Twitter at Lulu Freistat. That's F-R-I-E-S-B-A-T. My website is hollerbackfilm.com. That's the first film that I made where holler back is a term for democracy. Democracy works when you holler back. So that's H-O-L-L-E-R-B-A-C-K film, hollerbackfilm.com. So you can holler at me there and sign up for the email list that I keep. I do send out when I do a lot of times video investigations where I show, you know, particular systems that are problematic or areas that I think need focus. So you can get on the list and get updated that way. But what I really want to, encourage people to do is to really think about whatever it is that you have to offer. And there's so many people who have gotten involved now. I think the first thing is to really take this issue on as one of your key issues, to say, this is ground zero. This is really, I understand how every single other issue that I care about connects and rests on this issue. All roads lead back to the vote. If the votes are not accurate, if they are not counted accurately, then the people that we entrust to make decisions for us on all the issues that we care about will not necessarily be the people that we actually elected. So the vote and whether or not the vote is accurate is really the most foundational issue that you can put your energies toward. And then you can think about, you know, where do you want to get involved? Many, many states now have groups that are getting together and working on this. I want to just kind of like give some sort of just like anecdotal things that I think are inspirational. Like look at somebody like Jenny Cohn. Jenny Cohn is somebody who I have to see like how many followers she's got. Oh my God, she's got 54,000 followers on Twitter now. She started out, I'd say like maybe 2 years ago, just as somebody who got interested in this, and then she got concerned about it, and then she got obsessed with it. And now she is just documenting everything. She's tweeting constantly. She created lists of checklists for people in terms of going to the polls and what you can do. Have you checked that there are paper ballot backups if the machines fail? Have you checked your voter registration status and make sure that it hasn't been deleted or changed? You know, she started writing articles. She's a lawyer. She has a legal background, so she had definitely some training. But basically, she was somebody who got involved, and then she got really involved, and now she's incredibly well-informed. She has done research and armed herself with information and figured out what she can do. And then there's other people all over the country. There's people like Jim Soper and Ray Lutz who are taking screenshots of all the election results as they come in and have organized teams to do that. And I know that Bev Harris is doing a lot of research right now on corruption. And I'm not going to be able to shout out everybody in the election integrity community because it's a huge network of people. There's, I know, John Brakey has gone all over the country informing people and teaching people about ballot images and how the new technology coming out creates a ballot image that, if it's released to the public, can help us all check the votes. You know, candidates and citizens will, I think, someday in the not-too-distant future be able to check the votes ourselves. And John Brakey, and that's already happening in Wisconsin. One county, Dane County, is already putting ballot images online. So Brakey's got a team of people going around the country and suing election officials if they won't keep those ballot images. And Alex Halderman is going around the country showing people how easy it is to hack the machines. And Philip Stark is going around the country teaching people about risk-limiting audits. And, like, there's just so many people have said, what's my skill? Is it statistics? Is it, am I a good people person? Can I get together, you know, and just go out in my community and connect people and tell them that I think this is important? Like, you know, people are figuring out what their skill is. They're connecting with other people. Oh, there's a woman that I covered in Wisconsin, Liz Whitlock, and she and her friends all went with their clickers. They had a hand clicker, and they went to the audit that was happening in 2016 in Wisconsin in their county, and as the ballots, they went to the recount, and as the ballots were fed into the optical scan machine, they would click. They would click for each ballot that was scanned. They had two people. One person would click for Trump. One person would click for Clinton. So they could do their own count as the ballots went into the machine. Then they got different results than the machine. And then they put up a fuss. And they said, hey, this isn't right. And the county officials were furious and tried to kick them out of the count. And then I came in and we got footage of it, and I put it online in a video investigation, and people went nuts. And it got like, I think, 70,000 views. And people were like, that's not right. You can't just kick those people out because they're actually counting accurately. And then there was a real citizens audit. And then those machines were decertified. And they're not being used in Wisconsin anymore. And that is because Liz Whitlock went in there with her team and hand-clicked those counts one by one by one. Like, anybody can do that, you know, or maybe you can't. Maybe you don't have, you're disabled and don't have hands, but but you can do something. Everybody can do something. And just, I have to say, this issue is so, so, so important. Just get involved. Climate change is important. Yes, the planet is imploding. But if we can't make decisions that we can trust about climate change, we can't address climate change. We can't address taxes. We can't address immigration. We can't address social justice. We can't address education or healthcare, nothing. We can't address anything if we don't trust the vote and the people that we pick with the vote.
It is the bottom line, and yet it's kind of like we sort of, you know, I mean, I think this election is going to make this so much clearer to everybody. But, you know, otherwise people bracket it. Like, I well recall during 2016, all of your findings and reports and your investigations, which we reported on in Connect the Dots, of serious statistical anomalies that data experts said, you know, indicated some kind of tampering. And nobody really wanted to pay attention to it all throughout the year. But, you know, and yet when the election results came in, suddenly everybody was looking at, were the votes in certain key states honestly counted? Were they not? And yet, you know, it comes around, and, you know, at that point, there's a huge focus on it. But then, you know, I'd say the most people just kind of forgot about it and went home. But what you're pointing out is that there's a whole group of people who did not do that. There's a whole group of people who didn't forget that, or didn't just simply want to think, oh, it all happened, you know, it's all due to a foreign nation. Maybe they played a role, but maybe this played a role too. And the people you're describing made it their cause. They brought to bear the skills they have. They got up, they focused on it, and that's why all that you're describing is happening now, is that it's been a wave of people getting, you know, more and more aware and involved and learning and accepting this hard lesson that we can't take the votes for granted. You know, let's just talk for a few minutes about the machines themselves, because my understanding is that the way on the one hand, the vote is not done nationally in a way that's consistent. In each district, in each state, there's, you know, one way of doing it versus another way of doing it. There is no uniformity in terms of the rules. And also, are we using the most helpful and transparent kinds of systems that are well-regarded in other developed nations around the world? Or are we, for some reason, using, you know, hodgepodge of hackable, inferior forms of voting machines and processes?
It's a great thing to focus on. And it goes back to the question that we were talking about earlier about corruption and about the EAC. So, no, we are not using the best equipment. We are using the worst equipment. Really, the bottom of the barrel, the worst, cheap equipment that is older than any major functioning business in the country is using. These are computers that are 10, 15 or more years old, and even when they were initially sold, they had old parts. They weren't even modern and up to date when they were first sold. These systems are basically junk systems, and they were called that by the technicians who worked on them. Kim Zeter did a report in the early 2000s, and she had a whistleblower from Diebold and the term that the Diebold technicians used to describe the Diebold voting machines was junk shit. That was the technician's term who worked at the Diebold plant. So no, we do not have top-of-the-line voting systems. We have the opposite. And if we look at what other countries around the world are doing, they are moving to paper ballots. I spoke with a Dutch hacker recently on another piece that I'm working on, and his team hacked the Dutch electronic equipment and showed that it was easy to manipulate. And within several years, the Dutch government had outlawed voting, that electronic voting equipment, and gone back to 100% paper ballots. It just didn't take that long. The hackers presented the problem, and the government said, oh, yes, that's a problem, and they addressed it. Almost within a matter of years, they had eliminated those electronic voting machines. And then Germany did the same thing. And I could have the order reversed there. It could have been Germany first and then the Netherlands or vice versa. I'm not sure. But they both, because of the information that was presented by these hackers, outlawed that electronic voting equipment and stopped using it. Whereas here, we have white hat hackers, academics, who have been showing that the equipment is hackable for really the same length of time. I know I filmed Alex Halderman hacking the AccuVote TSX in 2007, and we're talking, you know, this is 11 years later. So we're, that machine is what they're still voting on in Georgia, all over the state, 11 years later after it was demonstrated to be completely hackable. And you really have to, again, you're going to have to, you have to look at the money. You have to trace it back. This is like any of the other industries where we have corporate conflict of interest with, you know, with good government. You have vendors who are trying to make money, and they are controlling the dialogue. Those vendors, for some reason, are controlling the dialogue about election security, and they have managed to get a lock on what regulations are passed against them. They've managed to maintain what's called proprietary software, so no one is allowed to look at the code that's running on their software or their hardware. When academics and white hat hackers have gotten a look at it, they found it to be full of security problems, completely vulnerable to hacking. But the vendors have managed to really control the narrative, and if you just look at their actions seem to focus on their profit, on their bottom line, so not on security. So, for example, ESNS, the big machine that they're promoting now of the new machines, is the ESNS Express Vote. That's a machine that is 3 to 4 times as expensive as any of the other machines. It's a touchscreen machine, and it has many security vulnerabilities. It has the old security vulnerabilities of the touchscreen machines combined with new security vulnerabilities because it prints a ballot that has a barcode on it. And so it's like new and improved with more security vulnerabilities. And that is what they're marketing now instead of a more secure machine. And you have to say, well, why? You have to ask, you know, why would they do that? Well, the machine is 3 to 4 times more expensive, so they make 3 to 4 times the profit. So, again, it's always follow the money, and you see where the money leads. The money leads to profit for the vendors and more security problems for the country. And how is it that the vendors are still managing to, you know, that they're not being regulated by Congress, that they're not being regulated by the EAC? Mm-hmm. Then I think we have to ask, well, what is the conflict there? Is it possible that the people who are being elected by these machines do not have a problem with the machines, because they're the ones who are being elected by the machines? And then you really have a catch-22. How do you get someone out of office who is refusing to create better security when that lack of security
is what put them in office.
I'm sorry, Paul coming up. Yeah, that lack of security is potentially
what put them in office.
Them in
it wouldn't
office.
Be in office without that. And so then, in
or
fact,
possibly,
having an insecure
right?
machine that can be manipulated in their favor. And I just want to circle back because, you know, we began the show describing, among other things, the fact that there was an operational computer sending out a Wi-Fi signal in the secure, supposedly secure room where the vote count was set up to happen in Dallas County, Texas. And the reason why we don't want an active computer sending out Wi-Fi signals, once again, is precisely because of the very hackability that you've been describing, right? That's why it's a problem that there's a Wi-Fi there. If you go to hand-counted ballots, then there's no signal coming in to manipulate the machine or going out to report on what's happening with the machine or whatever that computer is actually doing, which it should not be doing. So this is actually what we've just been discussing in the latter part of the show makes it clearer how wrong it is that you found a computer in use and Wi-Fi in use in that in Dallas County.
Yes, and to be clear, they are some of the machines they're counting there are using hand-marked paper ballots. They're using three different machines in Dallas. They've got touchscreen machines with no paper backup. Those machines are very, very vulnerable. The voter's vote is going to go directly onto the computer's memory, and if it's changed in some way, there's no way to ever get it back and find out. Or it depends on where you change it, but it's very, very tricky in that instance. But they are also that's what they're using for day of election. Let me see. No. They were using the touchscreen machines in early voting, and then for their absentee ballots, they're on the optical scanner, the M650. That's actually a very hackable machine. I have a video report out on that. If you check my website. And then and they're also voting on the M100s, which is another optical scan. So they've got a mix of paper ballots and touchscreen machines. But what's really important to think about is that most of this equipment, we're using computers, most of it in one way or another is hackable. What's really important is that we get to hand-marked paper ballots for every vote where that's possible. And for disabled people who can't hand-mark their ballot, we want to make sure that they have a machine that prints out a ballot that's verifiable for them. So everybody uses a paper ballot whenever possible. The voter marks the ballot themselves hand-marked, not printed out by a machine, hand-marked paper ballots. And then we want to count those paper ballots, as many by hand as possible. So, and there's people have a lot of different systems that are, you know, being developed. There's a lot of conversation in the election security community about what are the best types of audits. I'm a big favor of 100% hand count audits. I call them modified 100% hand count audits. That's what they do in Columbia County, New York. They often don't count 100% of the ballots by hand, but they count a very large percentage of the ballots by hand. And in many of their local races, especially, they do count 100% of the ballots by hand. They count them first with a digital scanner. They scan them, so they get a quick count for election night, so everybody's happy. And then the next week, they go back, they get teams of volunteers, and they efficiently and quickly count them by hand. They've trained their volunteers. They've done it for, I think, about 8 years now, and they've got it down, and it's a simple, efficient process for them now to count a large number of their paper ballots by hand. And then you've also got other systems coming out, risk-limiting audits, where you don't count all the ballots by hand, but you pick you count a statistically significant sample, enough to give you confidence, hopefully at least 95% confidence, that the correct candidates have been elected. And then you've got these other systems evolving with slideshow audits or ballot images released to the public. But what we really want to be doing is very thoroughly, in a very robust, transparent, open to the public, open to the media, comprehensive way, counting ballots by hand, so that if the machine is hacked or there's some sort of tabulation error, we will know and we will rectify it and we will have confidence. Now, how do we get to that point? It's challenging because, as we said, election officials do not seem interested, elected officials, people that we've elected to office to handle these things for us, they don't seem interested in passing this type of legislation right now. And we can't elect them out of office because we're not sure that the votes are actually being counted correctly. So it's definitely a real challenge. I think what we need to do is really keep the pressure on, keep showing how much of a problem this is. There are people in Congress now who really, really get it. People like Ron Wyden from Oregon, a senator, who is calling ESNS out on the carpet and saying this behavior is unacceptable. He sent them letters. He said, answer these questions. He said, you're not being, he's trying to make them accountable and just reveal to the public what a problematic company this is. And he has introduced legislation for risk-limiting audits, for mandated hand-marked paper ballots, where any voter would have the opportunity to use a hand-marked paper ballot. So Amy Klobuchar has really done a lot. There's another Republican, James Lankford. Some of the other people have signed on, Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris, both signed on to pretty solid bills. I know Elizabeth Warren signed on to a pretty solid audits bill. So I think the more that we can really again, look on the positive. Find the congresspeople and the senators who have highlighted this issue. Let them know how appreciative you are, how much you support them for doing that, how great that is, how, you know, that is like your number one issue. Really give them support. Let them know it's meaningful. Read the legislation. I know it's tedious, but look at the fine print, because in one of these bills, it started out great, and then they went in and they deleted the line about mandating audits. The bill has the same name, but now it doesn't say audits or mandatory anymore. So, yes, you have to read legislation. You have to do it. You have to keep in touch with your congresspeople and your senators, and you have to put the pressure on when they're not making good decisions, when they're not really supporting the kind of reforms that we need, and really let them hear from you about how much you love it and how great it is when they do, because I know they get a lot of negative feedback, and I'm sure they like it when they hear, like, hey, I really love it that you did this.
Mm-hmm. And this is also, just to emphasize it, this is all decided in your own locality. I mean, there are certain laws that are national, as you mentioned, but there's a lot of it that really goes state by state and, you know, county by county. So this is, you know, people are like, oh, you know, be active at the local grassroots level. Well, this is a prime opportunity to do that, really, because this is where it happens. You know,
so true.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the people that cited in my article, I did this interview with Benny Smith, and he is a great example. He's a computer programmer, and he got interested in elections and started doing consultation work on it. And he started doing analysis of the election results. And what he did, he took a photograph of the poll tapes when they were posted at the precinct location. And he took a photograph of that. And that's something that is a great thing to do, is to photograph or video the results from your specific precinct at the location. And he took a photo, and it was over 500 votes. And then when the central tabulation results were announced, it said that the results in that precinct were only 300 and some votes, and about 200 votes had gone missing. And so he pressed the issue, and Bloomberg News came down, did an investigation. Following that investigation, the election official resigned, and this past election, in 2018, was the first major local election that they had since that election official resigned, and they had a complete change of the guard, and all of a sudden, women and people of color got elected to these offices. MSNBC did a piece on 8 black women who got elected all of a sudden in this election after the election official resigned. I mean, it was a complete transformation. And, you know, Benny Smith really was at the core of that. He was a computer programmer, said, hey, I'm going to take a look at these results. So So, yeah, at the local level, get involved. You can make a difference. You can make change.
Thank you so much, Lulu. This has been so incredibly inspirational and important to hear right now. Remind our listeners one more time how they can connect with you, follow your work, connect with other people in their area, and read your article live on Truth Out today.
I'd love to. So I'm Lulu Freistadt. I'm a journalist and a documentary filmmaker. You can follow me on Twitter at Lulu Freistadt. You can find the website of the first documentary I made at hollerbackfilm.com, hollerbackfilm.com. You can sign up for my email list there. And the article that I did on this issue with the Wi-Fi and the problems in Dallas County can be found at truthout.org. And I was also on the Brad blog with an interview tonight, so you can go to bradblog.com and listen to that interview. And there's a audio interview that I did with Laura Presley where she talks about this Wi-Fi and how concerned they were about it. At those with the article, you can see photos of the Wi-Fi signal and photos of the discrepancies in the election results, things like that.
Terrific. Thank you. That's so your work is fantastic. And I have a funny feeling that we'll be talking again about this entire election cycle. So, you know, we've been basically, you know, featuring you and having you on the show, and it only continues to become more of concern, more people getting involved, more people becoming aware of why we have to be involved, and I'm sure that's truer today than ever before. So, you know, we look forward to having you back again, and thank you for your great work, Lulu Freistadt. Thank you so much.
Oh, Allison, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I always find your comments so insightful, and just talking to you is always such an uplifting and informative experience. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I feel the same way. I really value your work so much. And thank you, listeners, for being with us, for voting, for being activated, for following the issues and being with us here on Connect the Dots. We'll be back next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Head tall, keep marching forward, be woke, be active, make it happen.